This is maybe the definitive song of 1917. And I want to see if you can guess what it is before the refrain kicks in. Singer is Nora Bayes. Songwriter is George M. Cohan.
What's a Yankee Doodle Dandy?
No.
Oh.
Bopping along.
Yeah, I see him. Is he going to kick in now?
Soon.
Over there.
There it is.
I got it right before she said over there.
You didn't get it.
I did right before she said over there.
We will go to the audio tape. You got it right after she said it.
No, I was like a hair before. I was anticipating. I knew it. Over there.
I don't believe you.
I know this song from cartoons and that's it.
Look at the picture they have of Nora Bayes, who's female but is dressed like a male.
Like Paul Revere.
Yeah,
trailblazer for the time.
Yeah, I've been saving Over There for a while, but we have a special episode this week. It is going to be a murder mystery. The main murder mystery, of course, who killed Frank Little, but we'll get into that in a little bit. We need to set the table first with some of the other stories that's been going on this week in 1917.
We haven't done the O'Hoyle yet.
Oh, welcome to 100 Years Ago Today. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan, and joining me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, hoy, Jeff.
Ahoy, hoy, Vinny.
It's very weird. We're doing this in the daylight. We've never done a show in daylight before.
No. We're doing this a little earlier than we normally do because I am going to be driving away very soon, basically as soon as we finish recording, to go on vacation. And Vinny and I were talking about our vacation plans because he's going away the week after. I will be looking after his dog again, which will please my daughters to no end and will put me getting a dog off yet another week.
A whole week, I believe.
A whole week.
Great.
I'm just living it one week at a time. There's only 7 days of saying, no, you can't have a dog. And it's tempered by a week of, you can't have a dog, but this dog we can rent. We're renting this dog. Our sponsor this week is, believe it or not, Converse All-Star Sneakers. 100 years ago today.
Really?
Yes.
Same design.
This was, as I'm going to tell you, this was before Chuck Taylor started to play basketball. But they were around. And they were introduced in 1917 and 1923. They started to be branded as Charles Chuck Taylor's shoes. And he was an all-star, so they called them the Chuck Taylor All-Stars. And somehow that name has stuck for 95 years now?
Yeah,
96 years?
Chucks even. They're all like, you know,
right.
you can use the nickname for it.
Yeah, here's what they looked like in 1920. It's
the same design. Yeah.
Same design. It's a little more bowling shoey back then,
mm-hmm.
because it's got the black and white two-tone color look.
Yeah.
But the soles on the bottom are identical.
I imagine the smell is exactly the same, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Converse have that
really fabricy smell.
Where once that stink, there's no going back.
So here's our ad. This is actually from 1920, not quite 1917, but it's close enough. Converse, non-skid, the all-American basketball shoe. They hyphenate basketball. Non-skids are picked by champions. They're worn by the crack college teams. Non-skids are brothers of the famous Big Nine. You, of course, know who they are. With all the 9 big points of supremacy, only they're specially designed for basketball work.
Well, I don't know who the Big Nine are.
I don't know who the
Should we look it up?
It would take too long. We got a lot of other stuff to cover. And I'm just going to tell you, it's going to be 9 colleges.
So I got to sit around weeding to know what the Big Nine are.
The Big Ten is like 12 people now. It used to be 10 teams. Back then, I guess it was 9.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm guessing.
I'm just wondering if it was like the same type of, like, I imagine it was very different colleges with like the big like basketball powerhouses.
Yeah.
At the time, you know?
The Edmonton Normal School.
Yeah.
Yeah. Non-skids are made on our exclusive Footform Last, which gives ample toe room, a snug fit over the instep, and proper support. They have the two-piece quarter instead of the single-piece back, which permits shaping the back seam, thus obtaining a perfect fit around the ankles. And, you know, I'm thinking about it, and they still do that now. That's how chucks are made.
Yeah, man, nobody would play basketball, like real professional basketball in Chuck Taylor. You blow out your ankle.
Yeah, but up until, I think, the 50s they did.
Back then, like, what, you had a short ankle or just, like, blowing out your ankle was just no big deal?
No, it was that no one had anything better than that. The very best you could do was a like, a waffle iron made of leather that you would just put on your shoes with canvas. That was the height of technology. Unless you could add some flubber into the mix. Other than that, nothing better than a chuck. Our scientifically designed non-skid sole of live rubber. Wow. I thought they killed the rubber, but I guess it's live. Eliminates all unnecessary weight.
What does that mean?
Wait, eliminates all unnecessary weight? Chuck Taylor's like 19 pounds. Owing to our special light gravity compound. Okay. Live rubber, light gravity compound. This is like a Warren Ellis science fiction comic.
Yeah, this is just like gibberish. This is gibberish I come up with.
Although I like the idea of light gravity, which is basically flubber. Mm-hmm. So they are talking about flubber.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is no insert ballast in non-skid soles. Let non-skids help you win. Find the shop that sells them in your town. If brown is preferred, All-Star is the same type of shoe.
You know, I know what flubber is. Mm-hmm. I've never seen any of the absent-minded professors.
I didn't either. I've seen the Robin Williams flubber, but I didn't see that until recently.
I never saw any of them.
No.
No. I know the flubber reference. That's about it. I thought it was football. Wasn't it football they played, though?
The first one, I think, was basketball. The second one, I think, they moved to football.
Oh, the Robin Williams one is football?
No. The Robin Williams one is basketball, but the Fred McMurray one, first one basketball, second one football.
Oh, there's a sequel.
If I'm right. And yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how flubber would help you in football.
I think you could just bounce
over. You just jump over people? Like
yeah. Don't think necessarily about how it could help you. Think of ways it would be funny to play in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And that you could accomplish by having a guy in really bad wires.
Now, like I said, I haven't seen it. Maybe you can confirm or maybe you know this.
Okay.
Did this involve slide whistles? Were there slide whistles every time somebody did it with flubber?
I hope so.
Was all like...
It had to, because how else would you sell it? You need sound. We see and hear movies. 50% of the experience is oral, so we have to have that slide whistle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, on to the meat of the story.
It's me jumping. I'm jumping up and down, people.
Before we get to our murder mystery, we're going to set the table a little bit. 100 years ago this week, August 2nd and 3rd, was the Green Corn Rebellion. Take it away, Vinny. Tell us all about the Green Corn Rebellion. Okay, you're smiling. I'm laughing. So, the Green Corn Rebellion was in Oklahoma, which I didn't know this, but it was only a state for 10 years by 1917, and it was basically the Alaska of 1917.
Yes.
If you were a libertarian wackadoodle, you went to Oklahoma because you thought, there's lots of land, it's basically free, I can do what I want, I will grow my own crops and be self-sustaining.
Pretty Montana.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's where all the Americans who felt that were back 100 years ago. And the draft had just started, and there were a lot of socialists that had moved there. I think Oklahoma was like 20% socialist during the last vote. And the socialists were trying to become the anti-war party. So if you were opposed to the war, the socialists were saying, come join us, be a socialist. We're opposed to the war too, and we'll fight and we'll get America out of this war. Oklahoma also had horrendous land. Which is something that you know. No one ever says, let's build a great farm in Oklahoma. You know,
have said that.
Okay, people have said it, but it's always been a lie. When I'm talking about Oklahoma right now, is the color green anywhere in your mental image of Oklahoma?
No. I picture it just looking like Dust Bowl.
Yes.
Like nothing, like it's still Dust Bowl.
Right. When you imagine when they're making Oklahoma, like the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, you don't imagine any green. You just imagine brown, just fields of brown.
Wait, hold on. Oklahoma, where the grass, right? They mentioned grass.
Yeah, they do, but it's going to be brown grass. It's going to be stuff that, like, horses and cows can maybe live on.
So was that, like, an ironic thing when they talk about grass in the musical Oklahoma?
I think it was just making people feel better. Like, okay, it's brown, it's disgusting, we got grass. Technically, we do. So, lots of people are farming there, but it takes much more work in order to get crops in Oklahoma than in any of the surrounding area, because the land is worse. So when the Selective Service hits, the Oklahomans realize we're going to be hurt worse than this, because we are dirt farmers. And there's three people who are farming 40 acres, and we can't pull one of them out because Uncle Sam says he needs to go serve his country. So they want to rebel against the Selective Service. They get a bunch of guys together, and they decide we're going to march on Washington, D.C. And they are marching against Big Slick Woodrow Wilson. That's what they called him.
I hope that maybe that's what Wilson called himself, right? The Big Slick.
Yeah. Well, that was back when he was in the independent wrestling game.
Woody the Big Slick.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was just managing.
The Dr. Style, Woodrow Wilson.
So the socialists, because everyone back then tended to become like an angry mob, a Simpson-style angry mob.
Yeah. Torches, pitchforks.
Torches, pitchforks. If there was someone in town they didn't like, they would, like, firebomb their house. And so it was a legitimate concern when 400 of them got together and said, we're going to go march on Washington, and who knows, maybe we'll kill the president. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. So right away, someone from the group went to the local police and said, there's 400 people who are trying to overthrow the government. So so the police came and tried to break up the rally. They arrested a bunch of people, but didn't charge most of them. Three people did die in the violence. But assuming that there were a group of 400 people that were trying to overthrow the government, the fact that only three died and the rest were kind of given like a slap on the wrist and said, get out of here.
Can 400 people overthrow the government? I imagine you need at least 450, like, right? Like, that doesn't seem like...
And they're also planning to walk to Washington, D.C. from Oklahoma. This was not a well-thought-out plan.
It probably petered out somewhere before Kentucky. And...
Right. Right. I mean, I have bad plans all the time, so I can commiserate with the Green Corn Rebellion. Just 2 weeks ago, we were talking about...
Did they bring green corn with them?
Oh, no. There were a lot of Muscogee Indians who were involved, and the Muscogee Indians have a green corn festival.
Mm-hmm.
So it was named
after. We don't smoke marijuana in Muscogee. I should do more singing on the show. People have been asking me that. A lot of people writing in saying that I should sing more on the podcast.
Hundreds, would you say?
At least? Yeah.
Maybe 1,000?
These are, and by the way, not email, handwritten letters.
Wow.
Like, like the end of, like, Miracle on 34th Street. People coming in with giant bags of mail demanding that I sing more.
Now, when they say that the amount of singing you do should change, are they saying increase or decrease?
They want more and more Haggard.
Okay.
So I was trying to give it to them there.
They want more.
We don't take our trips on LSD.
So, we've talked about the Green Corn Revolution. And that is going on around the country. There are groups of people who feel like the socialists are trying to get us out of the war. And there are socialists who are trying to get us out of the war. There are also a whole lot of people like business leaders and local police who decide, I just want to kill anyone who is disagreeing with the government right now.
Oklahoma is still a socialist haven, I imagine.
That's why the Oklahoma City Thunder moved there. Thunder is definitely... social. Oh, wait, I just thought of something.
What's that?
Thor is from Oklahoma. Maybe that's why the Thunder moved there.
I bet that's not it.
No?
No, I'm guessing 100% that wouldn't be it.
You don't think the Oklahoma City Thunder moved because they read the comic book Thor and realized that the city of Asgard moved to Broxton, Oklahoma?
Maybe, here's the thing. There's probably one guy.
One guy?
Like, when you know, they probably had, like, a name the team.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And one guy who, you know, he voted for that reason.
Okay, is there a guy who's cosplaying as Thor at every home game?
No.
No?
No, there's not.
But now I'm hoping that there is. And I'm hoping there's like he has a Kickstarter to trying to get his documentary made about him. and he's walking around in like a sleeveless t-shirt all the time, and he's maybe 178. And he's working really hard to maintain 178.
I know, I don't really follow basketball. Maybe I said no too quickly. Maybe there is a Thor. All right, we got now. Now I have.
Now I have. Okay.
Thor, Oklahoma. Let me see. Thunder Fantasy. So Thor, wait, does he like live in Oklahoma? He doesn't like live like among the gods.
So the storyline was that Asgard was normally up in Asgard in the heavens of some other plane of existence, but then something happened that they needed to crash land it on Earth. So they crash landed it on basically an empty plane outside of the small. Maybe fictional, I don't even know if it's real or not, town of Broxton, Oklahoma. And then it became like a fish out of water story with all these Asgardian gods next to like a one stoplight town.
Well, you're kind of right. There's not a cosplayer.
There's not a cosplayer.
However, Oklahoma City Thunder does sell Thor merchandise.
They do. Oh, I knew there was a connection. I knew it.
Yeah.
So you can get hammers.
In fact, the mascot is clearly a Thor ripoff.
Oh, let me see. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they've done enough to make him different because he's bald and he's got
a red beard. Big red but beard. He has the hammer.
Shirtless. Yeah, but the hammer is more like a sledgehammer.
That's not what Thor uses?
No. No. I mean, the fact that Thor is a hammer is weird because a hammer is, if you think about it, a pretty disgusting instrument in order to fight someone. They never actually show someone like Thor caving someone's head in by hitting him with a hammer.
No,
even though he's like Hulk level strength.
What does he do? Just he's like the handle?
Well, they will show
like,
that.
Like he'll poke you?
He's always hitting a robot and the robot just like by concussive force flies back. You never actually see him hit someone and someone's jaw just like rips off and flies across.
Yeah, that'd be very weird for Hero to.
Right.
Yeah, you're a sledgehammer.
And then Thor needs to apologize in his fake Shakespearean. I doth hit you too strong. Methinks I do not know the strength of mine own Mjolnir.
Is that how Thor speaks?
I mean, in a better accent than that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
he doesn't speak like that in the movies.
No, but that's... They decided to just give him like a proper English accent instead of the fake Shakespeare. But I like the fake Shakespeare. Okay, on to our main story. We've set the table by talking about all of the rivalry about the pro-war and anti-war forces. We're now moving up in the world from Oklahoma to Butte, Montana for our murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready, Vinny?
Yeah, let's figure out who done it.
Who killed Frank Little? Now, you are no longer Vinny.
Was it you?
You are now Ed Morrissey. Ed Morrissey is a real guy.
Okay.
He was the chief of detectives for the town of Butte, Montana. You've been on leave for 2 weeks or so. You return to your town to find that in your absence, a man named Frank Little has been murdered. No doubt about it. He was lynched on the edge of town on a railroad trestle. Your job is to investigate, find out who murdered this man. And I have 8 clues here.
Okay.
Okay. You can flip the room and pick them at random.
All right.
And then at the end of the clues, you need to tell me who murdered
Frank Little. Do I put it face down?
No, you can do it face up. Because
Dash.
Okay.
It says clue, Dash.
Dash. So Dash is Dashiell Hammett. Dashiell Hammett is a famous mystery writer. And back in 1917, he was working for the Pinkertons. And the Pinkertons were brought in to try to take care of Frank Little. Now, you don't know much about Frank Little because you haven't gotten to the other clues, but he was apparently such a problem for certain individuals in the town of Butte, Montana, that Dashiell Hammett was asked and said, I will give you $5,000 if you kill Frank Little. And he turned it down. And for the rest of his life, he was horrified. Not that he turned it down, because he's glad he turned it down, but that he was living the sort of life where someone assumed that he was, like
a thump. Yeah, because he wrote mysteries, they figured this guy would love to murder somebody.
This was before he wrote mysteries.
Oh,
this is
right.
The thing that got him into mysteries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he would apparently bring this
up. I'm pretty sure people being like, you know, we need Hitchcock. We need Hitchcock to actually commit a murder, because he's filmed...
Oh, wouldn't that be great if Hitchcock was actually like a mass murderer and he just always knew how to get away with it?
This would be the perfect cover.
Because it would just be so hokey if someone arrested me for
my
it.
Flock of killer birds I'm unleashing on the world, and I'll just use the cover of a movie.
I like that. We should put a little pin in that and come back to that later.
All right.
Okay.
Who was Frank? That's a clue here.
Who was Frank? Okay, yes. So now you get to find out who Frank Little was. Frank Little was the best union organizer in America.
Mm-hmm.
He was, like many people, opposed to the war. He was not just trying to set up unions, because he was able to succeed at setting up unions and using the unions to exert great power. He was ultimately trying to get us out of the war. Mm-hmm. He was trying to get so many unions on his side and on the anti-war side that tens of thousands of millions of union workers would say, we are all stopping work until the U.S. is out of the war. So he was one of the biggest figures in America, and there were probably a couple hundred thousand of people who wanted him dead, which doesn't help your case very much.
Okay.
Because you're, you know, you just
look at it. Could be anybody.
It could be anybody. Everyone's a suspect.
No, this is. Is the who shot JR.
Yes. I'm very proud of what I've done.
I find it interesting, by the way, that there actually were so many anti-war people in 1917, because, like, we're always kind of taught afterwards that, like, when we went to war back then, everybody was for it.
Right.
You know, that that wasn't until Vietnam that anybody had any idea of, like, not wanting to be in the war.
Yeah.
Like, that was the first time it was ever uttered. Everybody just kind of went along with it back then. But apparently that's not true. If you were a Muskogee Indian, for example.
Right.
In Muskogee, Oklahoma, USA.
People ask for more songs than just that one song. You do know other songs than Okie from Muskogee, right?
Muskogee. Yeah.
I still don't know how to say it. Ask me how to say your daughter's name, and I'm going to get it wrong again.
All right, go for it.
Okay, Lucia.
He's got it.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. I got it. So, the reason why Frank was specifically in Montana was because of what we talked about a couple weeks ago, the Granite Mountain explosion. Remember how there was a fire in a mine that went on for, like, weeks and weeks?
Yes.
He was up there to protest the bad conditions in the mine.
Protesting a fire.
His protest is just fire bad.
Frank was actually short for Frankenstein. That's true. That's full name Frankenstein Little.
That's his main platform.
Fire bad! Want bolts in everyone's neck.
That's it. That's one of his platforms. The other platform is, and make of that as you will. Okay.
Frank hung from that trestle. They thought he was a Halloween decoration.
You have five or six more clues. They're in random order.
So all right. Clue. Okay. Yeah. The funeral.
The funeral. Okay. Frank Little, because he was one of the most dangerous men in America, was also one of the most popular men. At his funeral, 10,000 workers attended. And another 3,500 people who weren't union members attended as well. So this was one of the biggest events of the year, the death of Frank Little. He's not remembered now, but it was a huge deal then. It was like the Kennedy assassination of the time. Assassination is
I thought you were gonna get drunk. I figured you were gonna fix that in post.
It's too hard to fix individual words in post. It just sounds bad. Mm-hmm. I'd rather just let people know that I missed.
All right, well, go by the clues I have so far.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that whoever murdered Frank is gonna be blending in at the funeral. So I have to question all 10,000 people.
Plus another 3,500 attendees. So that's 14,500 people you need to question.
Yeah.
But we have it narrowed down. It used to be everyone's a suspect. Now it's only under 15,000 people.
That's right. Yeah, we can easily fit them in the Prudential Center.
Yeah.
Do I have a deputy? I mean, help. All right, we have the autopsy.
Okay. This is very brutal, and I'm going to take a lot of the brutality out. He wasn't just lynched. He was beaten pretty violently for a long amount of time. He was dragged behind a car for a long while. And there's a lot of details about the specifics of what happens when you're dragged behind a car that I'm not going to share because I'm trying to wash them out of my mind. Suffice to say that even if he wasn't lynched, he probably would have died anyways from his injuries. And right beforehand, someone smacked him on the back of the head, and there's a very small hole in his head, in his skull.
All right, that seems like a clue.
And one last clue, he scratched someone real bad before he died. They found a bunch of, flesh under his fingernails.
All right. Hole in the back of his head. And scratch somebody.
Yes.
Okay. So we know. So we're looking for somebody with a scratch, perhaps.
Yes.
All right.
Someone with a scratch.
Clue. The one-armed man.
The one-armed man. Okay.
Where am I finding these clues? Like, just, like, laid out? Like, if If this were a real murder mystery.
Yes, they've moved the investigation into a Victorian mansion. And you're finding them in a secret passageway between the conservatory and the lounge.
Oh, good. And with my trusted lieutenant, Colonel Mustard.
So, the one-armed man is named Billy Oates, and he is a person of interest. He has a hook for a hand.
Uh-huh.
He lost one of his hands.
Back of the head.
Back
of the
head.
The old hole.
Yes, Billy could do that, but because he only has one hand, he wouldn't be able to tie the knot in the rope, and he wouldn't be able to put it on very well.
I think you might do it. He'd use his teeth. His teeth do it.
There were multiple people involved in this murder. Billy Oates helped, but he's not the main culprit.
All right, well, we're going to get Billy a turn. We're going to turn Billy.
You're going to turn it. Okay.
Now, your partner's in there right now. He's telling us everything. Billy, come on. Just tell us what we need to know, and we'll go easy on you.
You ain't going to get nothing out of me, copper.
And then I'll come out. I'll be good cop. All right, Billy, look here. Here's a cup of coffee. Come on, dude.
Wait a minute. You were good. You were just bad cop a minute ago. It only works if the good cop and the bad cop are different people. Although maybe it is working, because I'm confused. I don't know if I'm going to talk to a good cop or a bad cop next.
Yeah, you're amazing. You're good with the voices. You really are.
Thank you.
No, it's like Frank Welker's right here. All right. You're right. A male version of the late June Foray.
She died too soon. Well, mm-hmm. She died like 98, so maybe she didn't die too soon.
No, she was almost 100. She was almost...
Wow.
We could have had her as a guest here.
Yeah.
If only. You know, we'd bring her in, we'd ask her questions about 1917, and she wouldn't know anything because she was born in 1918.
If we keep this going to like 1918, 1919, we can do a whole week just on June Foray.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then we can do a whole Mel Blanc week. I heard someone say it wasn't that June Foray was the female Mel Blanc. It was that Mel Blanc was the male.
I think it's Mel
June
Blanc.
Mel Blanc?
Yeah. You're Frenching them up good. the Mont Blanc thing.
I'm thinking of his classic work doing Pepe Le Pew.
All right. 3777.
3777. This is an urban legend that's exclusively in Montana. If you go to Montana State Police, if you see a lot of their local biker gangs, if you see the state troopers, a lot of them will have 3777 on it. And it is a very ominous set of numbers. And no one has quite the reason why they're ominous. But the normal story is that a grave is 3 foot deep, 7 feet long, and 77 inches down.
Oh, okay.
So that it's their way of saying you're going to need to dig a grave this deep mm-hmm. if you do anything more to us.
All right. So it is not exactly 6 feet.
No, but whoever did this was a local Montanan, and they signed their work.
Okay. So it's a Montanan. Let's see. All right. Leave of absence is a clue.
Leave of absence. Okay. This may be an important clue. You've been gone.
You guys playing at home?
Yeah. Play at home. You've been gone for 20 days. Mm-hmm. So a lot has happened. So you're not picking up the trail like on the morning after it was found. So by this time, a lot of people have gotten their story straight.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to reiterate that for you.
I'm on a leave of absence.
That you were on a leave of absence. Yeah.
Okay.
So when you're coming back, a lot of people are prepared for your questions.
Okay. Finally, we have first and last.
First and last was something else that was also written, or like a note that was also left on Frank Little's body. In the vigilance committee movement in the West, which turned into the vigilante movement, you normally get three warnings. Mm-hmm. The first one, a second one, and then the last warning. And the last warning, you would get beaten up.
Okay.
And this was their way of saying, we're skipping the first two warnings, and we're not even giving you a third warning. We're just killing you and pretending that we gave you three warnings. It's basically saying you deserve it.
All right, well, that's all my clues.
Those are all your clues.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the one-armed man is involved.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yep. And he was one of the people who was tried in Chicago all throughout 1918 for this murder.
Well, who is he? So who's from Montana? Now we're looking at, because they know the 37...
They know the 3777.
So we need someone who's like a local Montana.
Yep.
Who's from Montana? I don't know who's from Montana.
Okay, you ready for the twist, the M. Night Shyamalan style twist?
Mm-hmm.
The murderer, Frank Little, is you.
I did it!
Yes. That's why you took a 2-week leave of absence. Because he scratched you. And you needed to go away until you healed. And then when you came back, all of your Confederates got their stories straight, and you walked through a kangaroo court investigation. Because the police were one of the groups that were after Frank Little.
Well, why did I do it?
Because you hated this guy. Because he was trying to get us out of the war. He was trying to set up unions. He was trying to stop the business that was keeping your town successful.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good. I'm glad I did it. I'd do it again, too.
The grave marker Frank Little says he was slain by capitalist interests for organizing and inspiring his fellow man.
Now, how did they catch me?
Never caught. This is my supposition, based on my reading of the case, that Ed Morrissey must have been involved and must have been the man who was scratched, which is why he left.
No one saw this before you.
I am the one who is jumping to this conclusion. Yes, this is. I've solved the murder.
Why aren't we going to the feds?
Because everyone's been dead for 90 years.
What if you get lynched now?
I'm not a wobbly. The Wobblies were the nicknames for the International Workers of the World. They were exclusively after
Wobblies. I'm saying we're revealing something here. You might get lynched.
Breaking news.
By one of his descendants, Morrissey. Morrissey's actually going to come after you now.
I can imagine Morrissey being the very, very worst type of assassin for hire. Oh, God, just kill me already. Stop talking. It made me so depressed. I'll do it myself.
No one has ever thought of this guy Morrissey doing it until you. You're the
people
one.
People have connected these dots.
No, so you're not the first person. You're trying to take credit for the work of other people.
Well, I am accusing a man of murder, which is a pretty big accusation to make.
I'm just saying other people thought of this first. You're making it seem like you're like Quincy over here.
Okay, fair enough. Other people have put the dots down and let you connect it. I am the one connecting the dots. But when you connect the dots, you are technically accusing someone of a very serious crime. So that's why they are not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie, a documentary about the Frank Little murder called An Injury to One. That came out about 15 years ago. That can be our Nickelodeon for the week. And are you ready for the quiz?
Sure.
Okay. Our quiz is about the birthday boy, Dick Brown. You know, until I said it, I didn't realize that there might have been something funny about the name Dick Brown. A combination of first name and last name that in 1917 was perfectly fine. Our child's name is Dick Brown. No one will make fun of him for that. But Dick Brown is a cartoonist who gave us Hagar the Horrible.
Is it Hagar or Hagar?
That's one of the questions in our Hagar the Horrible quiz. There is an umlaut in Hagar the Horrible, by the way.
Okay.
So officially it's H... umlauted A-G-A-R. I don't know if that affects pronunciation.
Probably.
I mean, it should, but we're a bunch of Americans putting it.
I will go Hagar. Hagar, I guess.
You would say Hagar, then?
I'm going to go Hagar, yeah.
Okay, like Sammy Hagar.
Well, there's only one G, right?
Yeah, there's only one G.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I never thought about that. Hagar and Sammy Hagar, that's the same word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah.
He probably got a lot of Hagar the Horrible jokes growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got like the long, wild hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... that he may have like played into that nickname.
Mm-hmm.
We might not have gotten Van Hagar if Hagar the Horrible wasn't around.
You see, one of the questions is it Hagar or Hagar? So you know the answer is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay, so it's okay. Hagar.
You're saying Hagar.
I'm getting it right.
It is Hagar.
But you're saying Hagar. If you knew the if you already know the answer, why were you saying Hagar?
It's the distinction that the family calls it one thing, but I feel the general public says Hagar instead of Hagar.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going with what the general.
Are there still? I know we discussed this a little bit at Handicap, but mm-hmm. Are there still new Hagar?
There are still new Hagars. Yes, his son is doing it.
His son 80.
Yeah, his son may be close to retiring, but his son's name is Chris Brown, which 10 years ago was just, well, it's just regular normal name. Now it's the world's most famous domestic abuse proponent. Okay, first question for you. Is Hagar/Hagar older than we are? In other words, what year did the strip premiere? Before or after our birth in 1976/7?
I'm thinking he's older. He's older.
Yes, started in 1973.
Yeah.
Next question. Hagar, I'm not going to be able to switch back to Hagar because I've said Hagar for my whole life.
Well, he started Hagar later in his life then. He would have been like 56.
Yeah, he was a cartoonist in World War II. He had a cartoon about the Women Army Corps that he was doing for a while. And then he did some other stuff, some animation stuff. And then he made this in the 70s. There was apparently a whole group of animators that all lived together in Fairfield.
So he like came as late. He's like Grandma Moses almost.
Kind of like Grandma Moses if all they did was draw Vikings. Although maybe those flowers are in the flower bed of a Viking. It could be. I don't know my flowers. Maybe they're Norwegian or Swedish or Danish. Okay, so someone in Dick Brown's family was nicknamed Hagar the Terrible, and they made the strip based on the nickname, and they switched Terrible to Horrible because it's assonant, so that's better. Mm-hmm. So who in Dick Brown's family was named Hagar the Terrible? Was it Dick Brown's father, was it Dick Brown himself, or was it Dick Brown's son?
Chris Brown.
It was Chris Brown?
Yes, I mean, Chris Brown was the...
Yeah, Chris Brown was Hagar the Terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually him, but it was his son's nickname. So Chris Brown, who's currently drawing Hagar the Horrible, gave his dad the nickname, and dad made the comic strip about it, and now the son is currently drawing it.
Why did he... Why Hagar? What was the... Is that an actual, Norwegian name?
I think so. I mean, Sammy Hagar is, I'm guessing, Nordic somehow. It looks Nordic enough. So, yeah, I think that was just a regular last name. Or maybe it's a first name, even. I don't know enough about the Swedes in order to answer your question correctly. But the next question for you is, what part of Scandinavia is Hagar the Horrible from? They specified this in a 1984 strip. So, was he from Finland? Was he from Sweden? Was he from Denmark? Was he from Norway?
I'm thinking of one. I'm thinking Finland.
You think he's a Finn?
Yeah.
No, he was from Norway, so he's Norwegian.
The reason I said Finland, I was going by the old comic book, like comic strip writer. They would find Finland to be the funniest of all.
Yes. Yeah. But the particular reveal that he's from Norway is the son asks the father, "Are we from Norway?" And he goes, "Yes." Like, why don't we say we're Norwegian? And then the father says, "Well, we don't want to brag," which is cute.
What do you think? I just drew Hagar.
Oh, that's a pretty good Hagar.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Can you name either Hagar's dog or his duck? He had two pets, a dog and a duck.
Let's see. All right. Here's just a... This is my... This going, I'm trying to get into the mind of a...
The mind of a...
Of a... Like an older cartoonist of the time.
Yeah.
My guess, he called his dog and his duck duck.
Those are solid guesses, and they're of a piece. But no, the dog's name is Snert, which I wouldn't have gotten. The duck's name is Kvack, K-V-A-C-K.
Okay.
That one I may have pulled up from the ether, because I haven't read Hagar in 20 years.
Were you a big
years.
Fan at the time, at one time?
I read everything in the comics, and all of my daily newspapers and weekly newspapers had Hagar the Horrible, so I read it all the time.
Did you ever own a paperback collection of Hagar comics?
I never pulled the trigger on that. I did that for Farside, for a couple of family circuses.
I had Farside, Calvin and Hobbes, and some Peanuts.
Yeah, I never had Peanuts, but I had Garfield, but that felt obligatory.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel like is saying that you've watched an X-Men movie in terms of, what do you want, a medal? Everyone's seen that. It's no big deal.
I don't think I ever owned a Garfield paperback.
Really?
No.
Wow. That's the line between us. I owned one Garfield paperback and you didn't.
I don't think I did. I may have, but I don't think I did.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You wouldn't even remember. Mm-hmm. Because the Garfields are made to be kind of disposable. They don't stick in your memory very well.
No.
I'm pretty sure that you could just run the same 20 Garfields for 30 years and no one would notice.
That may even would happen, actually.
It could be like a great studio art project. See how long they can go before someone notices it's not just the same style of jokes about the Monday, exact the exact same joke.
Same strip over and over again. Recycled every 2 months.
But no one wants to say, isn't this totally identical? So, Hagar's dog is Snert, his duck is Crack. Do you know the name of his relatives? He has a wife, a son, and a daughter. Do you remember any of them? His wife shows up a lot.
I'm guessing his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Helga.
Helga! Yes, did I get it right? You got it.
Yeah. I was just going with...
with H names.
Yeah, and also, you know, the... What would be the most generic...
Yeah, the generic... I would have gone Brunhilde myself,
mm-hmm.
because she looks like a yeah. German opera singer. But I'm glad you got that right. His son is named Hamlet. His son is kind of like a Bobby Hill, where he's, like, truly not a Viking, but his son is okay and loves him anyways. And his daughter is named Honey, but it's spelled H-O-N-I. Dick Brown and Mort Walker, who made Beale Bailey,
yes.
collaborated on which cartoon?
Hold on. Because I know trivia about this.
Okay, yeah. Bring it up.
High and Lois.
High and Lois, yes. Because come up repeatedly on the podcast.
Yes, we've told High and Lois several times. And Beetle Bailey has some connection to
yes.
High and Lois.
Beetle Bailey and Lois are siblings.
Yes, that's it. They were connected in some way.
Yeah, so these two guys pitched the idea that we get a new, like, family suburb sitcom drama about Beale Bailey.
It took two fucking people to write High and Lows. They're going to be churned out in an afternoon at Comic-Co.
I think it's charming. I love the idea of these guys who are basically like neighbors would just wander over to each other's houses and they bang out a week's worth of High and Lowses and they mail them off and they get the extra money and then they'd, I don't know, they'd build an above-ground pool or something. Or a wet bar. Whatever they did in the 70s.
High and Low seems very... I read High and Low when I was 8, and even I knew it was pretty, basic writing.
But it's tough to make that sort of basic writing for years and years without ever how do you cracking.
Get, and I'm thinking, like, I think one of them called the other, like, I had a great idea. Like, wait, which idea? All right, it's a family.
I've been matching phone calls about the individual episodes.
And in the family, there's a wife and kids, and nobody has any kind of discernible personality in this script. What do you think? Do you want to work with me on this one?
Speaking of discernible personalities, Dick Brown, here's our next quiz question, was the inspiration for one of the crew of Beetle Bailey. Do you know which crew member he was? This depends upon, A, your knowledge of Dick Brown, who you don't know what his personality is like.
His son named him, like, the Horrible.
Hagar the Horrible.
So, yeah. I'm picturing big, loud, possibly physically and verbally abusive. Yeah. So, I'm going with Sarge.
Sarge. Okay, good guess. And I like your way of thinking, and you were partly right. He is a bigger character, but he's Plato. He's Plato, the intellectual of the base.
Oh, I didn't know that. I actually don't know Plato. I know Beetle Bailey.
You would recognize Plato.
And I know Sarge.
He looks like
And then there's like the
Rich Summer from Mad.
There's the general.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the secretary whose name's like Miss Bosoms or something.
Or Miss Buxley.
That's it. Yeah.
And then they brought in an Asian guy, which is like a Colonel Yo-Yo or Colonel Yang or something like that. It was like, God. Did you just find an Asian person and say, what would be the worst thing I could call a character?
And you just know that was Mort Walker. Mm-hmm. Very proud of himself for how progressive he was. Like, look, I got a Chinaman, huh?
Eat it, Charles Schulz. You got Franklin.
This is even better than Franklin. And look, he's in the military, huh? He's, you know, yeah, he says no ticky, no shirty, but, you know, he's in the military. He's...
Our final Hagar the Horrible question. Where in Orlando would you go to find a Hagar the Horrible themed gift shop.
I think you go to... Oh, wait, hold on.
It's coming.
Hold on, it's coming to me.
It's coming.
In Universal, they have all the comics. There's a comic strip area in Universal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There were two Universal parks. Which one?
Islands of Adventure.
Islands of Adventure, you got it. Yes. That's right next to the Marvel superhero world, which is weird because Disney owns all of the Marvel heroes.
Yeah, but they're not allowed to have it in Florida, I believe.
Yeah, so you need to go to Universal in order to see the Disney characters that Disney acquired.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be great if they just kept on buying the other Universal characters. We bought the Minions. We bought the Transformers.
We got Harry Potter.
Yeah.
We got...
We even bought Woody Woodpecker for some reason. Because we heard you might have him.
I was thinking about Woody Woodpecker recently.
Uh-huh.
Woody Woodpecker, I don't believe, is part of general zeitgeist anymore. See, when I was a kid, I always thought that the big three were Mickey,
Bugs, and Woody Woodpecker.
In my mind, it was those were the from separate universes, but those were the three main cartoon characters, each representing their own universe.
This is Mickey's this still is like thinking like RC Cola is the equivalent of Coke and Pepsi.
Bugs Bunny's still around.
Uh-huh.
Woody Woodpecker, I don't think he's been around in years and years. I remember when I was a kid. I think I was, you know, I don't think anything has been done with Woody Woodpecker since like, what, late 80s maybe?
I am imagining there's some poor guy who's been going around Hollywood for 35 years trying to get a Woody Woodpecker film off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And every year he's saying, kids love him more than ever. More than ever, kids love him. And they're talking to a bunch of 45-year-olds like, I've never watched a Woody Woodpecker cartoon. My parents never watched a Woody Woodpecker cartoon. My kids never watched a Woody Woodpecker cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, I remember there being the Woody Woodpecker show.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you did not think of him as being the big three.
No. In fact, I have the Woody Woodpecker theme in my head right now. And I have mistakenly gotten the Muddy Mudskipper theme from Ren and Stimpy in my head.
Muddy Mudskipper. He's muddy. Mud.
Skipper Show.
Good. Now you're the Mickey expert. Is there any, like, do people in Disney, do they scoff at, like, Woody Woodpecker?
I think he's below that.
Like, do they have respect for the Warner Brothers people, though? Is there a mutual respect in that world?
Yes, there's a lot of respect. But this is going back, like 60 years to, like, the 1950s. But Warner Brothers was able to make everything a lot cheaper and a lot faster. And Disney was the people that would take forever, and their work would cost 10 times as much and would look twice as good. So
But the Looney Tunes are funnier. I think you both agree on that. Looney Tunes are funnier than Disney cartoons.
Yes, I think so. But they are standing on the shoulder of the Disney cartoons, where people realize all these water effects and like entire houses falling down, that takes forever to do, but we can get just as many laughs out of just having like a flat frame fall down. That takes no animation effort at all. And that's how they were able to pull the funny out. They took everything good Disney did and they found a way of doing it cheaper. And they focused even more on characters and personality design.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just feeding everything to Donald Duck, they had dozens of characters.
Yes.
Speaking of movie stars, our big story next week is going to be the birth of Robert Mitchum, one of the all-time great actors. So join us next week. Until then, ahoy hoy.
Ahoy hoy.